You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510 WWBC. We're also heard on FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. All our shows can be heard on the Sita Media website. And my friend Ellen Little, my right hand, is here, and she will tell you all, our dear listeners, a little bit more on how you can get online and listen to our show.
Absolutely. So online, if you're listening right now on the radio, obviously you know the dial that you're on, but if you'd like to listen online, you can go to 1510wwbc.com and just hit that on-demand button. You'll do a little download, and then you'll be able to hear us live right here on the radio. And then all the shows are posted on cedamediainc.com every week, and with the pictures and so forth of our guests, and archives of the last 10 years are on there, Sita, believe
it or not.
It's
hard to believe we've been on air for 10 years.
10 years, yep.
And we
two shows, two guests a week for 52 weeks, and we never missed. I mean, I think we had to record three shows in 10 years.
Yes. God is good.
God is really
good. He sends us some really awesome guests and some great sponsors. I think people like having us on air. Because every time I think, oh, maybe Ellen and I, we should just fold up the show and do something else. And somebody will say, hey, I want to help sponsor our show.
Right.
And, you know, and then we keep it going. And it's wonderful. It's community radio at its best.
That's absolutely.
And bring in great people in our studio every single week so that others could know what they're doing and what they're advocating for. We have people who own businesses. We have people who are running for office. We have creative folks. We also have people here in our town who are CEOs of businesses and people who are running nonprofits.
Yes.
And we do a lot of good stuff. We've had scientists that called in and talked about COVID-19.
Yeah.
And so I'm grateful to have a voice. And we all know freedom of speech comes with a responsibility. And that responsibility is to play nice.
That's right.
Right.
And all of our shows are unscripted and fun and conversational. So we really get to the heart of what's going on in our community and what's going on with our great guests that we have coming on the show.
Well, you know, I made a video waving a sign for Joe Biden, and like a 30-second clip, and it had like 23,000 views, and someone called me and said, hey, would you like to have a YouTube channel and I'll help you? And I said, well, does it involve money? And the guy said yes, it does, but you can get ads. And I said, listen, I am blessed in that I really don't want to make any more money. I just want to help people from my heart. Whatever I have from my nursing job and what my husband invested with, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm grateful. But adding one more item to my list to be responsible to get guests and channel and ads and more content, it's too much.
It is.
It's too much,
it's
in addition to working as a nurse and having the show and, you know, whatever. So I thanked him and I'm like, I'll just move on. But anyways, for our listeners who are tuning in today, we have a really good line up today. In the studio, we have our friend Molly Tasker is here, and Molly is running as a nonpartisan for a position here for the mayor of Melbourne, and she served on the Melbourne City Council for a couple of terms. And Molly does believe in working together and solving issues in an ethical way to benefit our city. So welcome to our show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so we're gonna be hearing from Molly in the second half of our show. And on the phone, we have a friend, Ellen. Shauna Presley-Vircher is an award-winning political media strategist and social justice advocate. She's a widely acclaimed speaker, recognized for powerfully advancing the conversation on a number of humanitarian issues. And she's also an author, and I know she's on the phone.
And a producer as well.
She's a producer, yeah. And well, we're gonna let her bring us up to speed on what she's doing. So, Shauna, you're on the phone, and your mic is an open mic. So, good afternoon, and welcome. Thank you for calling in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Thank you so much for having me. It's good to talk to both you and Ellen and Molly. I'm excited to hear about your run for office. Thank you for stepping up and doing the hard job of agreeing to run.
Thank you.
Yeah, we need more women in politics, and we need more people with a good heart that do choose to put people over politics, I should say, to run. Correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. We're definitely feeling that now.
Yes, my goodness, we are. So I'm excited that you're calling in, and thank you for taking the time. You've been doing a lot of stuff since we last saw you. So bring our audience and Ellen and I up to speed as to a little bit about your background and what you're doing now.
Well, I'm a political media strategist and fixer. And so there's a few television shows that kind of allude a little bit to what I do, Scandal, Olivia Pope. There's a few different things that Ray Donovan, though he's a lot more violent than I've ever had to be, where I'm called in to fix problems. And so just to your earlier point, Sita, that you can't afford to ask people what their voter registration card is before you decide to help them. You have to just look and try to dive in with your values and your knowledge and your expertise and solve problems. So I do that. I've worked on a number of high-profile issues with people on both sides of the aisle, Governor Jeb Bush, Barack Obama, of course, which is how I got picked up in a number of different ways on the media side. Worked in Alabama for several months on the Doug Jones race, that Senate seat. I've worked in California, New Jersey to get Phil Murphy elected, juvenile justice legislation in 34 different states, legislation for women, and then also working on some of the stuff that people think about, like celebrities that have a crisis or a high-end executive or company that needs somebody to come in and fix it. And so we were getting set to start filming a reality show for a major streaming platform about what I do, and the pandemic hit. And we had to delay the taping of that show, which was set to start in New York and New Jersey. And we realized that if we were having problems telling the story about what we felt was important for people to know about how to get involved in their community, how to solve problems, that every single candidate that was running for office would also have a similar problem reaching out to their voters and reaching out to tell their stories. So we launched an entire television network dedicated to candidates and voters so they'd have a place to come and get that information.
Yeah, I love that you are an advocate for building a better America, an America that works for all. And, you know, we all hear candidates talk about opportunities for all, but you live that and you inspire so many of us and motivate us, because people use it as a campaign tool. They say, oh, we want opportunities for all. But really and truly, what does opportunities for all means? It means that you want people to have an affordable home, a home. You want them to have a decent wage. You want to make sure that people have health care. It's not enough to talk about medical issues and mental issues, but to make sure that we follow up. And yeah, does this person have health insurance?
What also are these reasonable solutions? Because you start with common ideas, common goals, and hopefully common values, how we treat each other, even in moments that are very high stakes, even when the cameras are on and we might get instant gratification for saying something crazy or hurtful. Is that how we choose to live our lives? That's what we're finding now is such a center stage. But then at the back end, there's the hard work of governing. And I don't know how many of your listeners had a chance to watch Hamilton now that it's streaming, but I can tell you that soundtrack has played consistently in our office as we've gone through this to try to inspire us. And one of the lines of the musical is, winning is easy, young man, governing is harder. And there's nothing exciting or soap opera-like about that, but that's the most important thing. And so that's what we're trying to add a little bit of spice to, really kind of demystify that process and help people know right away, is this somebody that I would trust as a leader? And it's just really hard to do, especially right now with so much misinformation.
Right. Well, it's almost like a marriage, right? People get married and the hard work actually begins the day after the reception when...
After the wedding.
Yeah.
Exactly.
After the drunkenness has worn off, then you say, wait a minute, this is work. You have to be
right.
able... And I think it's the same thing in politics. You have to be able to have trust and respect and know that it's a person of integrity. And it doesn't really change the job of being having a person that you look up to in a leadership role. It's there, whether it's in your professional life or your personal life or even as a politician.
Well, part of it, too, we see this, that, you know, someone that's really good at talking is not necessarily good at actually picking up a shovel and getting to work, right?
Yes.
So what ends up happening is you have a lot of very talented, smart people, especially those running for local and municipal office, and they've been busy doing the work. They might not have held public office before, but they've been involved at their kids' school, or they've volunteered in their neighborhood, or they've been in their community or at their church or mosque or synagogue. And those people, a lot of times, do not win public office because they're not good at the showboating. And that's part of the game, right? Getting your, it feels weird for someone that just does a lot of hard work to talk about all of that work. It feels uncomfortable for them. So what we wanted to do was create this place where we could try to pull all of that together and get to know people, not just like, how do you feel about issue X or Y, but like, what was that moment that you decided to run for public office? Why? What is the issue that drives you every day? Every candidate has a story. And if they don't, if they can't tell you that story, that is your first clue to run the other way.
Well,
because they can't tell you why they're doing it, that's a problem.
Right. I know. You know, I ran in 2018 against Thad Altman. And what drove me to run was I just get fed up of seeing the career politicians, the people that move around from this office to that office to the other office, and they use the same talking points all the time. You know, it's like, okay, so what are you actually doing other than that? You see them around election time, you know, for pictures and photo ops and stuff. But other than that, you don't really see a lot of the politicians having a town hall, an open town hall meeting where people can ask questions. We don't really see that anymore, you know?
Well, and it's hard, too, because on their side, it's really a thankless job, right? Because if you do that, you know, there's a saying, especially, you know, we do media spin for a living. And sometimes my job is to go in and get more attention around something and figure out how to sell something in. How do I get people to care about this random bill that's sitting there in the legislature or this issue? But part of it is they're getting pressed for the wrong reasons. And candidly, most of the time, if you're a local politician and CNN is interviewing you, it's because something has gone terribly, terribly wrong. Like, it's not usually for a good thing. So we've got to change that dynamic, and we've got to show that there are fascinating, amazing, positive stories in everyday America, all across the board, in every office you look at. And we started at, could we do this, and how do we do this during a pandemic? And we quickly came to this point where, like, oh my gosh, there's so many stories to tell. How do we even pick? But that's what we want, right? We want to tell all those amazing stories about democracy in action so that you feel like you do know your mayor, you do know who your school board member is. And maybe it would have been a hard job for us to sell this idea to the public, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, but take a look around. Those local leaders are dictating everything right now. Who governs the police is what they use required to do their job, or is it brutality? Who's going to decide if our kids go back to school during a pandemic? Who's deciding if we, you know, have businesses open or not? The local leaders are everything, and you guys know that, but I don't think America as a whole understood that until recently.
Right, and you know what I like is I'm noticing that a lot more media coverage is being done about, instead of the politician or someone, a CEO, they're talking about the actual people. Like, for example, we're talking about online learning versus brick and mortar schools, but the people who are so concerned are the parents and the teachers. We have educators who are actually scared to death to go back into a school because they have pre-existing conditions. And I think it's important to do stories not just about what the National Education Association thinks or not what the school board member thinks, but pick a few teachers and talk with those teachers and ask them directly, how do you feel about education right now? And get those real stories and the passion out so that we could hear those people.
Yeah, absolutely. And that listening is such an important part of any candidate's job, too. And yet it's something that your kind of career politician just gets worse and worse at, right? They start to surround themselves with people that agree with them. They start to not listen to any of the negatives. And I understand how that happens. It's hard to read negative press about yourself all the time. And it is so toxic out there. But we can't shut off that wall of communication completely, right? Because things change. And if anybody took elected office 2 or 4 years ago with a plan, for example, on education, that plan has been thrown into a dumpster fire. It no longer exists. So how are you at listening and adapting and figuring out how to handle that crisis? And I got to tell you, like, not everybody's up to that. It's one thing to govern when everything's kind of normal. It's another thing to have empathy and intellect at a moment where we're the most challenged. And we're seeing what people are made of right now.
Right. So you've been in politics for years. Is this election right now that we're all facing different from what you've seen in the past?
It is. And it's not just at the top of the ticket. That's the first thing. So we're all talking about the presidential race, and that definitely sets a tone. I think presidents in the past maybe have made this look a little too easy. There was a time when even when I was doing work for the White House, I didn't need to know what country or town the president was visiting because I didn't need to, you know, pay attention to what was going to happen next. He was doing his job, I was doing mine. So people are paying more attention for sure. But the other thing is local leaders are more important, and yet there's hardly any information about them. So suddenly I care who's on my kids' school board, and I know nothing about them, and yet here's this huge ballot. So the down the ticket races, we're going to see more involvement than ever before. But the other thing is just how to vote and a voting plan becomes so important now more than any time in recent history. Is it safe? Will the lines be long? Puerto Rico just had to shut down their polling places because they didn't have enough ballots. Can we anticipate where the flow is going to go? Is there going to be weather incidences where if you have to socially distance outside in a long line, that you're going to be subject to weather, like rain and snow in some places? So having a voting plan and a backup voting plan is going to be more important now than arguably in a generation because of the pandemic, because of the volume we're expecting, and because candidly, in this kind of day and age, it can feel unsafe to even say what you believe right
now. So people
now
should request a mail-in ballot too. That should be their backup.
That can be one way to go. And I know that there's some questions about the postal system, and I got to say I've been doing this a long time. There's a reason to be uncomfortable with how the postal system is operating right now. But if you request a mail-in ballot and you're uncomfortable, and I will say I am one of those people, get the ballot. Turn it in early at an early voting location. A lot of them have drop boxes, or you can put on a mask and gloves and just go in, have them take it and scan it in and walk right back out. It takes 5 seconds and you can shower afterwards. But also, if you do that early, most municipalities, most counties or states have a website where you can go and see that your ballot was counted. And if you mail your ballot early, first of all, check how much postage you're going to need. It doesn't hurt to just throw a couple extra stamps on that thing. And then
yeah, I put three
sure
on mine. I put three on mine, and I live right here in Brevard. But so off lately, we're seeing so many people protesting. We're seeing so many activists. And then all of a sudden, we're seeing so many people involved in politics. I mean, this morning I was walking at the gym and I saw, with my mask on, just in case anybody wants to know, and I saw that there was looting in Chicago. There was some sort of a protest, and all of a sudden people are breaking into, on Miracle Mile, you're watching people looting and taking things that doesn't belong to them, which I agree with protesting, but I don't agree with destruction of property. So why are we seeing that happening now? And that ends up being that so many people are now getting involved in politics.
Well, there's a couple of reasons about what we're seeing. It's not just that it feels like that. It really is like that. The numbers of people requesting ballots is already skyrocketing. The number of people tuning in to different programs that are political is skyrocketing. So that's great. We want people tuned in. But there's another thing that happened with the pandemic, and it didn't occur to me until a woman, an author, Zerlina Maxwell, I love her. If you haven't checked out her new book, definitely do so. She had said this on MSNBC, and it was just such a huge thunderbolt moment for me. A lot of us, when we were quarantining, we were in close proximity to multiple generations. Our kids were closer than they were. Some of us lived with our parents during the time, or maybe we were calling them more often. And we were all watching all of this stuff unfold together. And for the first time in a long time, we were having these important conversations with each other, with our kids, in a way that, candidly, if we were in our quote-unquote normal lives, we would not have had time to do. I know my family, I never even knew how to turn on my vacuum or my stove before this pandemic. I was always on the road. Now we cook together every night.
We're spending more time together.
Right, and we're having those social conversations.
Right. I think you're accurate about that, because I'm having more conversations with friends and family as well. And talking about that, how do we approach family and friends who disagree with us politically? Because I'm hearing about sisters not speaking with sisters, brothers and their wives and their families. I'm hearing communities torn apart. People are really having a hard time with agreeing to disagree. So how would you approach that?
So keep in mind, I help resolve and remedy conflict for a living. And I cannot get legislation passed if I do not work on both sides of the aisles. Where I think we're getting confused is the difference between political beliefs and core values. If you and I share the core value that every child deserves an opportunity to learn, we can have even a heated discussion about the best way to do that. If you do not share my core value, and I'm just picking on you, Sita, because I know that you care about kids a lot.
Yeah.
But if you were the type of person that's like, that's that kid's problem, my kid is better, and those kids are probably going to end up in jail anyway, now we have an issue. Because that core value that one person is better than another, or that you have a right to make someone feel less than or not give them the opportunity this country was built on, it's just not worth the time and energy. So my recommendation is, if you're having a conversation about how to do something, you're having the right conversation. If you're having a conversation trying to convince someone to be more of an empathetic, caring human, find the empathy to understand that chances are what they're saying comes from a place of fear and ignorance. So try to have empathy for them, but then look away. You're not going to convince someone to care by now. It's just a lost cause. So try to focus your energy on something you can do, which is to help educate people on how or why you really believe in someone. Try to turn that negative, I hate so-and-so who's in office, to like, listen, I don't care for that person because I like this in my leadership. Try to pivot. We call it the art of the pivot. Pivot it to the conversation you feel good about having. Some people will respond to it, some people won't. And also, I'm heavy on that block button. I don't need your crud in my head. If you're coming on there like insulting people or being racist, like block, block, block. Like, hatred is not a political
belief. Right, because you know what it is too? You do find that we live in a society that is so reactive instead of proactive. And then when you start saying to people, well, why do we have a high school to prison pipeline? Why do we say defund the police? Why don't we just say reallocate the funds so that you give parents the opportunity to have some resources, to have after school classes, to have a tutor, to maybe not work two jobs but work one job and take care of their children after school? So you shift the conversation, because so many people were wrapped up about, you know, the word defund, until you sit down and say they're not taking away anything. We're just saying, why don't you put some of the resources into actually helping families? And the conversation changes when you turn it around like that.
Yeah, if you're having a genuine conversation, most of us agree on 80% of what's out there. Most of us share a core set of values. The problem that we're seeing is that those that don't, or even those that pretend to not, they get rewarded with instant fame, instant media interviews. They are instantly known in their party, even locally or statewide, right? So you get rewarded for being an idiot. That's not great for us, right?
Right.
Like, we really, but that doesn't mean that's a popular viewpoint, and it doesn't mean that we should accept it as one. So, you know, we are nonpartisan in the fact that we welcome candidates and politicians and organizations from all walks of life and sides of the aisle, but we don't allow hate speech. We do not, like, I'll tell you, we have a number of Republicans that we've worked with in Montana and in Missouri, but recently they had a city council meeting because there was a KKK store on Main Street in one of the cities, and they asked the city council, do you disagree with the KKK? And 3 out of the 5 of them would not answer. That's problematic, right?
Like, yeah.
There's certain things we can have an intellectual discourse on. There's others. If you think that an immigrant or someone of color or someone poor is less than you, I'm not going to waste my energy in that direction.
We have like 3 minutes left. We'll give her one of the ads. So, you know, I was speaking with some immigrants, naturalized citizens from the Caribbean, from elsewhere, and they're not registered to vote. They don't care about voting. And I'm knocking my head against the wall saying to them, well, you know, you use the roads, your children go to public universities, you know, you have parents on Medicaid. We are talking about wages and affordable homes. And they said, well, I just don't care. I think all the politicians are crooked. And at that point, I think you have to walk away. And like you and I said, you send me a text this morning, you concentrate on the ones who are actually registered to vote and will vote.
So it's one of those things that we have to look at voting, and I would, any politician that's listening, any candidate, anyone thinking of running for office or passing a bill, this is the first advice I give all of my clients. You are selling your point of view. It is selling. Take every sales course you can possibly get your hands on. And one of the things we're selling is the idea that voting matters, and it requires a belief and an optimism that, frankly, we could arguably say our country is not doing really great at living up to lately. I understand it. And understanding your target customer is part of it. That being said, we're having a fire sale right now and every idiot must go. So I don't have time to convert you now as a customer. Like, I got to get moving on people that are casting ballots in a few weeks because mail-in ballots are going to start soon. But longer term, we can't give up on them. Because if someone in this country is looking at what's happening and doesn't believe it can get better, that's our fault.
Right. So with the 1 minute left, give us your website so that our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends can go and check you out, Ms. Shauna Cressley Vircher, my award-winning political media strategist friend. Give us your website.
Well, thank you so much. So you can visit bluerein.com, and it's R-E-I-N-E, bluerein, R-E-I-N-E, and rein is French for queen because we're run by a bunch of women. So you can visit bluerein.com, and you can see all of our candidates. And blue is because it's a trustworthy color, but you'll see we have thousands of Republican candidates, thousands of judicial and NPA candidates. And if you're a candidate, it costs you nothing to be a part of this project.
I am so proud of you, because when you said you were going to be doing something big, I didn't imagine it was this, but you are just motivating all of us to send our friends and families to that website so they can look and see how we can bring our country together. And I think we need more unity instead of division and hate. Because so many people are anxious and fearful and depressed right now because of the pandemic. And what you're doing, Shauna, is just astounding. It's amazing. So thank you.
Yes. Well, thank you for having the conversation. And congratulations on 10 amazing years.
Thank you so much.
Ellen's going to take it from here. And we thank you for calling in. And yes. And I'll have you call back in another time, maybe in October or November, to give us an update.
That sounds great. Thank you so much, Shauna. And one other website I wanted to draw your attention to, reinmedia.com. It's spelled the same, R-E-I-N-E, media.com. We're going to be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends with Molly Trasker.
Portions yes. of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473. 2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MedFast Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
And family to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510 WWBC. We've had a great first half of the show with Shauna Vercher, who called in. And our second half of the show is sponsored, right? By the campaign to elect Molly Tasker. And I wanted to give a little bio about Molly. She's here with us today in the studio. She was born in Cumberland, Maryland. Her family moved out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, where her father took a job as a civilian at Kirkland Air Force Base in the 1950s. Her parents, older sister Carol, and Molly eventually moved to Brevard County, where her father worked for the city of Cocoa and her mother worked for Pan Am at AFTAC. Molly's a high school graduate from Cocoa High School, Florida Atlantic University, and Florida State University College of Law graduate. She's also retired Assistant General Counsel of the Central Intelligence Agency. In addition to being an attorney, she's an independent contractor, consultant to the federal government on national security issues. Since retiring from the CIA, Ms. Tasker has practiced law here in Brevard and has served 2 full terms, 8 years, 2008 to 2016 on the Melbourne City Council, including 1 full year as vice mayor, and she's also served 8 years on the Melbourne International Airport Authority Board of Directors. She's a volunteer of the Babcock Street Community Redevelopment Advisory Committee, and now she's running for the mayor. City of Melbourne Mayor. Correct. Congratulations. What a fantastic bio.
Well, thank you very much.
I know.
Thank you for that nice introduction.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was reading it, and I thought, Molly's been around.
Yep, CIA.
Molly needs
stuff.
To write some books.
That's right.
Because, you know, when people think about a woman being in the CIA or the FBI or things like that, you think of this exotic places and spies and getting to know the people. And I always think about, what was the gentleman, the ambassador? In Benghazi, the one who passed away, the one who was blown up in that blast.
His name.
I forgot his name. But
yeah, me too.
I always think about him because they said that he enjoyed being with the people in Libya. And that comes to mind that when you work as a CIA in the CIA, you are a representative of the United States government.
Yes.
And so thank you for your service.
Yes. Well, you're welcome. Yeah. Thank you.
So what made you decide to run for office?
It goes back naturally. All my years with the federal government, the Hatch Act kind of prevents you from being active in politics. But prior to going to work for the CIA, as a young person, my sister and I often spent summers with my grandfather in West Virginia. And he was a county commissioner in Preston County, West Virginia. And he always had us assist him with his campaigns or with his office work or anything. And I became interested, and I did a lot of reading about politics, fiction and nonfiction. And it just sort of fascinated me, but I had to put it aside for many years because I was a federal employee.
Ambassador Stevens, that's who it was.
Stevens.
Yes.
Because, it was going to kill you.
Yeah, it was going to kill me. But because you know what? Every time they talked about that attack, I always thought about what I read about Ambassador Stevens was how he wanted to sit with the people and have tea with them. And he wanted to be one of them, and he wanted to be blended in with them. And it always struck me that this is what America is about, that you get to know other people, other cultures, other lands. And like Shauna was saying, you sell the American value and our democracy to them as well.
Ambassador Stevens also, he wanted to be out, just as you say. He wanted to be out and about and touch base and see what the populace was doing. He was not afraid of being there.
And he denied security twice.
Yes.
I read that. So, you know, that's what I love reading about American CIA.
He was a terrific ambassador.
Yes, he was. So you're running for mayor of Melbourne in the time of a pandemic. What can the city do right now to help curb the spread of COVID-19?
Well, locally, as you know, we don't have quite the authority of either the county, the state, and certainly not the federal government. There are a few small things I would like to see us do that we can do legally within the bounds of our authority. And one is quite simple, actually. It's to require, if not the general public coming into stores, we can require, especially in restaurants and bars and such, that people, the waiters, the cooks, the hostess, the bus people, wear a mask. I mean, after all, these people, they take your order, they're standing right over you, they go back to the kitchen, they get your order, pick it up, breathe on it, hopefully don't sneeze on it,
yeah,
and bring it out to you to your table. So we
out of sight is out of, you're not sure what's going on.
That's right. But we could require that, just as we require hair nets. People say, oh, there's a hair in my food. Well, try saying, oh, I have COVID-19 now.
Yeah, you don't know where you picked it up.
So for health reasons and all, we do have the authority, health and safety requirements. We can enforce those. It doesn't have to be imposed by the county health board or anything. We can do that ourselves.
Yeah. And I've followed your career with as a friend and what you did on the city council for Melbourne. And I know you care deeply about the Indian River Lagoon. What else do you see? What else can we do to help the Indian River Lagoon? And we've had so many shows here with people from the Marine Resource Council.
Yep.
Dr. Lisa Soda has been on.
One of our favorite people, too.
Yes, we've talked in depth about what we can be doing as citizens, you know, to help. So if elected mayor, or should we say when elected mayor, what would you do to further help the Indian River Lagoon?
Well, I have to preface this with a comment that I would be talking to all of our local experts in this area, Lisa being one of them, and learning myself what we can do. We need to, though, as a city council and as mayor, I would have to seek out assistance from neighboring cities, through the League of Cities, all of us working on the same goals, and the county to do things like the one thing, the sewers. We in the city of Melbourne now, new developments, new houses are required to hook up to city sewer, city water. However, the city limits are they're not gerrymandered, but they're very squiggly. So you can go into Melbourne and drive down the street and there'll be, oh, a half a lot there, oh, two lots over here that are not in the city limits. They're in. So what we can do is, and those people, even though they've been offered sewer service, it would be at a cost. And I said, well, the big holdup seems to be, a lot of these are older houses, naturally. And they're not big houses. They're middle-class houses, plain old houses. And so what we need to find a way to incentivize their hooking up to the city sewer and city water to do that.
To do a conversion from septic to sewer.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, the get houses are disjointed. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
yes, absolutely. It's very jagged city limits. So that would be one thing we could do, is to incentivize it either through our local tax. We might do a half-cent tax, but preferably working with the county to get those, and we can't affect other cities, but we can affect the county to create ways to do that, to find funding to get people off the particularly the sewer system.
Yeah, because we all know what happens when they get old and they start leaking,
yes,
and all
yes,
that.
Yes.
And of course, you know, all the politicians, people who are running for office, I should say, everybody's platform always includes jobs with dignity, jobs with benefits, jobs coming in locally. How would you get people back to work right now during a pandemic?
Okay, it's a very complex problem. I've solved many complex problems over my career, however. What I would do would, once again, seek a cooperative approach to this. We have to integrate public works with public-private projects to, first of all, improve our infrastructure. By doing that, we will be putting people to work. We can get federal funds. It's an ideal time to seek federal funds for infrastructure. That's a popular thing to do now. So we have to jump in and do it now and fix our bridges, fix our roads, fix our water systems, fix whatever we
the
can
potholes.
Get.
The potholes.
Yes, the potholes. Mm-hmm. Whatever
that's
we can get.
That's where Ellen
financing
lives.
For.
She sees one. She has one down her way.
A favorite, huh?
Oh, yeah. I have several favorites, actually.
Yeah. And sidewalks. We have
yes,
a lot of sidewalks.
I do.
Yeah, I ride my bike.
I mean, I try to
we need
and
more
do
sidewalks.
Yeah,
and
do.
Did you know our old chief of police preferred that people ride their bikes on the sidewalks because there were so few pedestrians? And if you saw a pedestrian, all you have to do is get off your bike.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so much safer than to have them on those roadsides, where there's a ditch, big ditch on one side, and the road on the other side.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you could just fall right into
yeah,
the ditch.
But the infrastructure would get construction people and repair people back to work. That puts money. Then they'd get minimum wage. It would be contracted out to local companies to do most of this work. We have most of the qualified people around. But even just putting that much money back into the economy, and these workers often go for lunch, pick up their lunch somewhere, so that helps a restaurant. It's you have to build on it. Mm-hmm. And we're not too worried, frankly, about our rocket scientists and our engineers. We have tremendous companies here who have tremendous contracts with the federal government. And I brought along a list of how many jobs, when I was on council, how many jobs we brought in here by bringing in Embraer, bringing in enlarging Northrop Grumman, so on. So that aspect, I'm not really that worried. Our economic development people, Linda Weatherman certainly works hard at that. But we have to bring all this along at once. But we have to, I think, start with our infrastructure. And I think we do that by instituting public works and also projects which are public-private, where a private company has a desire to develop something, maybe a hotel. Okay, so we can work that by guaranteeing some of their loan. Or there's various financial ways you can do that.
You're saying you want to give everybody a seat at the table.
Yes.
If somebody has an idea,
and we have to
you
work
come
together.
To us and work together with them.
That's right. It's not going to be real fast. It will be there. And it has to start with our infrastructure. And we must do our infrastructure because this city's just going to grow We're at 85,000 now. It's going to be up who knows where before long. If we don't have our waterworks in place, if we don't have our roads in place, and such as that, then it would be forever. We might just slip away, but... Well, we never would. We
yeah.
too many contractors.
Yeah, I know. And you know, one of the nice things that the wonderful things about you, Molly Tasca, is you do love Melbourne. I mean, I've seen where you and I share a passion for the historic Green Gables.
Yes.
And we love the idea of the historic Green Gables restoring that old house, and that in turn would bring more jobs to Melbourne, beautify
Absolutely.
Melbourne, give people something to do, part of history, recognize what Mr. Wells and his family did for Melbourne. And we need people like you with vision to lead, not just that you have a great background working with the CIA and all that, but you actually care about the people who live in our city.
That's right. And I believe that we can do this together. This has no, there's no politics to this. We want to get rid of COVID-19, and we want to rebuild our economy and our city to a better place. We just have to go do it, and do it with some compromise here and there. A lot of people say, oh, not public works. Well, which is better? Public works that puts people to work with and getting federal funds, or just sending out $600 a week?
Right.
That not only, I mean, the people can at least keep their rent paid, but they don't have a job. They help them by saying, okay, Melbourne, here's a, I don't know, $20 million grant. We're going to build a new courthouse, a courthouse annex in Melbourne. Okay, good. We'll take it and we'll build it. And I know people who want to build it. I know the judges do, because that courthouse annex now is falling apart and the air conditioning
doesn't
work
out. It's so old.
Oh, it's awful.
I can't believe they actually, it's still working there.
So why don't we do that? The funding is available, and it's the thing to do now. It's a thing to...
Well, what you're talking about is bringing back the dignity of work.
Yes, yes. And improvement of the city, and giving people jobs, and increasing small businesses, because they go to a local shop, antique shop, or they go...
Yeah, they spend money.
Have lunch, they spend their money.
They spend money, yeah. Well, you know, we're living in times when we have to balance a pandemic. We have a terrible virus going around. And we also have to think about ways to revive the economy and get ourselves out of this mess that COVID-19 has put all of us in.
Right.
So, I mean, most people right now, they're looking at ways how to balance these three things, the pandemic, the virus, and the economy. And I think you have a good plan.
And it's not easy. It's very complex. We have excellent staff. We have experts up the kazoo around here that can help us with the technical sides of things. And I think hopefully we'll be able to get some federal funding in, especially for infrastructure. It's just essential all across the United States. That's essential to us rebuilding our local and our national economy.
Well, I think we had someone on the show a few weeks ago, and we were talking about police officers and other public servants and how to retain our civil servants. Do you have any ideas how to retain? Because we've heard of police retiring, other civil service people retiring, and we've heard of the vacancies where people won't even apply. So what would you do if you were the mayor of Melbourne to retain such civil service servants?
First off, I think you have to recognize the civil servants and recognize them. And I've heard people complain that they sit around all day and don't do anything and they make big paychecks. That's not true, by the way.
Right.
Not at all.
You mean they're not really eating donuts? They say, oh,
no.
The police is always in the donut.
But that does bring
me... They deserve a donut.
Definitely. That brings me, though, to one point I would do is in our recruitment of police officers, especially. That is so key. And that I learned from the CIA, where to select somebody capable and educated and knowledgeable and everything you want in somebody conducting national security work. And they have to be clean, too. They can't be, you know what I mean.
Yeah, not a good character.
Yes,
yes,
of good character. That's essential. And it's very, it's expensive, but you have to do your
extensive background checks.
You have to test them. You have to do extensive background
checks. And mentally,
checks.
Too. I think oftentimes they have to do that too,
comes
because
in, you don't like to tell people that they're going to be tested for their mental
health capacity.
Well, I think it's emotional intelligence. I don't know if it's mental health capacity. I think it's really about
it's
sure it is, but I mean it's about how they handle.
But it's, the thing is that the point is that it starts at the get go.
You're right.
Even as careful as the CIA is about hiring, there's still you still get a couple weirdos in or bad apples.
And then you hope that the group takes care of its own, you know.
Yes,
but
yes,
unfortunately, we haven't found that to be true in all cases.
So, so Molly, where would the money come from for us to help recover from the losses of COVID-19? Where do you think, what part of, I mean, is it the federal government going to be giving us money to recover?
Well, we certainly have to have grants because it's just so expensive and we can't, our taxing capability is insufficient just to do it ourselves. So that's what I'm saying. We have to do this as an integrated effort, integrated with the national effort, the state effort, the county effort, and we're part of it. And here's how we would like to do it. We in Melbourne, you know, give us the money and let us
distribute, allocate.
In a way.
Mm-hmm.
Allocate in a way that also improves the infrastructure.
Right. So you're an attorney. You also work for the CIA. You were also on the city council. What advice can you give someone who is sitting out there and don't volunteer, don't give back, don't give a hoot about our communities? I mean, people like you and I and all of us, we're advocates for something. You have to be. It's so wonderful to wake up every day and be able to be alive and do something. Where do you get your energy from?
Me personally?
Yeah.
It's a calling. It's like teaching. And I said this in one of my little box ads I put in the Florida Today. It's like teaching or preaching, acting or being a lawyer. It's a calling. You just see a need and you feel, this is what I have to do.
Yeah, it's wonderful that you did do that. So now you've decided to run for office. You do have a website.
Yes,
so if you want to give us your website, because you need volunteers, you need people to donate money, time, effort, energy, whatever they can to help you get elected. So give us that information so Ellen could put it on our website and we could spread the word. Because I think you're so calm. We need that in our city. Somebody who is rational and calm and compassionate.
I think we need a steady hand at the tiller right now.
And you have integrity to lead. I love it. Website.
Website. www.mollytasker.com.
Yes. It's up there already and all of the great information that's on your website. Easy reading, by the way.
Oh, good.
Very nice,
good.
Yes.
And
so do you have any events or anything coming up that I know it's kind of tough with COVID,
yes,
but are you?
I don't have any events. I will be attending a black forum where several of our black community leadership and business people will be addressing candidates for local office, telling them where they see problems, what they have problems with, and how they might help or at least educate us.
Right.
I learn something new every day.
Well, everybody is trying to build a foundation in the community.
Yes.
And the only way to build a good foundation is through investing.
And talk
invest
to each
in
other.
Families. Mm-hmm. Invest in families. Invest in where they live, in their communities. People say, I don't want my kid to go to a certain public school. Well, ask yourself why. Is it the community you're afraid of? Because lack of investments? What is it about the school? And you'll come up with the answer, right? Little children could tell you the answer to that. So you also served on the Melbourne International Airport Authority Board for, 8 years?
8 years. Mm-hmm.
How did you fall into that?
Well, there's actually, as a representative from City Council, you know, the city owns the airport. But they're independent in their economic development and the conduct of their business. But the airport was given to the city. And so there's sometimes there's a little the airport wants to do something.
Knocking, a little knock,
and
knock.
And the city says, oh, we're not sure you should do that right now.
Yeah.
But it works out well. The director of the airport and the city manager coordinate.
I love that little airport. They have grown, and they're so friendly. They treat you extremely well when you go there. I mean, they're courteous and polite. My daughter used to fly out of there to go to Charlotte, when she was in law school, mm-hmm. Charlottesville.
Yeah.
And we never had an issue with them. So most people who are running for office, they're asked sometimes to give us your 30-second elevator speech. Do you have a 30-second elevator speech? If somebody were to come up to you and say, hey, Molly Tasker, why are you running for mayor of Melbourne? What would you say to them in 30 seconds?
Well, first, because I see a need, and it's a need that for problem solving generally and for managing and coordinating things that I've had tremendous experience at, to just be blunt. I have the experience, the effectiveness. What we did in what the council did, I didn't do it all alone, certainly, and the city staff are very efficient, very good. So my 30-second might be that I'll look to the excellent expertise we have on our city staff and available to us from non-government organizations and the general public.
So you'd be a good listener.
Oh, yes.
And you're excellent at communication.
I have to take that in.
And yeah. I also love about the fact that you said it on the website, you've said it here too, about really impacting the diversity of the industries, yes, that are in Brevard County, because I don't think that people realize the depth of the companies that have come into Brevard County recently, even in the last 10 years, that have really provided, not just provided great jobs, but also provided great insight, brought people here that we would have never had come
and
here before.
And they spend
great
money. Impact. They great spend impact. Money, buy homes, eat
absolutely.
In restaurants.
Mm-hmm. And they have excellent,
you know,
salaries.
And you said it. You said they're intelligent. Molly said we have a lot of intelligent people
really
in Brevard.
Really intelligent people.
I hope to think we're one of those.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, the city of Melbourne and Brevard in general has a very well-educated
population. Well, you know what? If you wake up, like Molly reminds me of my mom, wake up, brush your teeth, comb your hair. If you're in school, do your homework, shut your mouth. You have a job, 9 to 5, do your job description. Don't get involved in riffraff and be a good citizen. Mm-hmm. And most important, vote. So what would you say to the people who are not planning to vote? They need to get off their couch and their behinds and vote.
Oh, we can't lose our vote. Please vote.
Yes.
Everybody.
And don't forget, it costs a lot of money to run a campaign. So if you have a few extra pieces of change that you could throw Molly Tasker's way, go to mollytasker.com and get that information.
Thank a little friend for coming
in. Yes, and Rhonda, who is the...
It's my niece, Rhonda Rhodes. She's got her MBA, and she's an accountant. And,
awesome.
She closed down a whole company, a branch of a company up in Jacksonville before moving down here.
Thank you, Rhonda, for being
yes,
here.
Yes, thank you both so much
show.
For being
Elena,
here.
Elena, thank you for always showing up and
thank
being
you.
Part
thank,
of the
thank
show.
Thank you for inviting me
and for
me
Shauna
on.
Vircher to be on. Make sure you hit all of those website links that we
today.
Put on here on the Facebook page. And we will be back next week with another edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510 WWBC.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC. You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.